chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I am thrilled to have Teresa Sansentera on the show today. Teresa is the Vice President of Information Technology at Barry Waymiller. Well, Teresa Sansentera, welcome to the Something Extra podcast. I'm so delighted that you are my guest today.
Oh, Lisa, my dear friend, I am so glad we were able to do this.
Me too. And we've got so much amazing things to talk about. So I know we need to get started here. But, you know, you and I have been friends now for several years. And I just want to give a shout out. I'm so grateful to him, to Srikant Ramachandran, because I was in his office one day and I was telling him about a faith-based event that was coming up. And he goes, you know, who might really like that is Teresa Sansentera. Do you know her? And I said, I do not. And he put us in touch with each other. And he goes, yeah, she might be interested in this. And so thank you, Sri.
Yes. Thank you, Sri, because it's been a game changer for me as well, Lisa. Yeah, I know we both often marvel at the connection. But it came at exactly the right time for me, personally and professionally.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. So just don't ever discount where you're going to meet people, right? And just the networking, we're not really going to talk about networking today, but it's so important to meet with people, and you just never know who's on the other side of one connection. And Sri is now, I think, moved on to Boston Scientific, so he's not at the same company. But, you know, I'm sure you still stay in touch, and I do too. But now, Teresa, you and I are involved in so many things together, which is really funny. So we're, you know, HMG, the CIO Summit, you're co-chairing that with Gary Vondahar this year, Inspire CIO, the Rooted Sisters. I mean, now our paths cross in so many different ways. So it's just really beautiful.
Yes, and I'm completely grateful for that. And Lisa, I think I mentioned to you, there's a saying that goes, when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. You've been a great connector for me, a great mentor. And I was pretty focused internally from a family perspective and a professional perspective. And then when Sri generously connected us, you came along at just the right time. And connected me with a wonderful group of professional women, the Rooted Sisters, the CIO community, just a ton of meaningful experiences. And the knowledge that I've gained have just really been force multipliers for me. And I'm eternally grateful to you. I know that, you know, sometimes you can get to a certain level within your profession, and it can be lonely, and finding support in the community is important. And I want to thank you so much for encouraging me to get out there and connect outside my normal sphere of comfort.
Well, that brings me so much joy. It really does, Teresa. I thank you so much for just saying that. But tell me about your growing up years. I know you grew up with a brother, and I know because you've referenced your parents, you and I share that. I had amazing parents. You have amazing parents. In fact, you give them credit, for the wonderful life, really, that you've had. What an amazing blessing, right, for both of us.
Yes, ma'am. So I have at many times along the way called both of my parents and said, look, I've had an amazing life. Was it always perfect? Was it always easy? No. But I wouldn't change a thing if it meant that I knew one less person or had one less amazing experience. So my mother was just an unbelievable mom. Who was so committed to the development of her children. She got us involved in everything. And I have two siblings. I have a brother and a sister. The sister came along really much later in life, but my brother and I were kind of marched together through our youth, and she encouraged us to be multidimensional, really, whether it's sports, music, church, scouting. She encouraged us to meet new people, experience new things, go new places, and never quit just because it became hard or we became bored. And kids do that, right? Where my dad, on the other hand, he was the taskmaster. He encouraged us and taught us the value of hard work, high performance, high accountability, frugality. He was a great saver and taking chances. It's kind of an odd combination of things, but he was both a professional inside of a company, but he also had an entrepreneurial streak and owned several businesses over the year. And to his credit, he never really saw a difference between my brother and I. So that's that meant that I got the same volume of work, the same quantity of work. And really, just in terms of academic expectations, they were actually higher for me than they were for my brother. And while I could probably not compete with my brother in terms of strength, I always could outlast him. So it taught me very early on to value the gifts that I had and to not shy away from difficult work. And I had great grandparents. So I really think I had probably the best possible upbringing and good start that anybody can have.
Yeah, so important. Well, I know you've shared that with me before, Teresa, and I just think that's so amazing that, really he even had higher expectations for you than he did your brother, but I think, we've talked about this on the sidebar conversation and, not quitting and the value of hard work. I mean, those are definitely some of your, your something extras, the grit, that you have and the perseverance to go through even when it's difficult. But, education wise, you have a BA in International Global Studies, you have an MBA. And then I want to talk a little bit about this later, but you've got several certifications from MIT. And those just came in the last several years. Strategy, innovation, leadership, you've got several different certifications. So that just shows me, Teresa, that you've got a growth mindset too, and you want to keep evolving and learning. But what were your plans as a little girl? Did you ever think that you would be an IT executive?
I never did. I actually thought maybe I might become a lawyer at one point when I was growing up. And life circumstances kind of took me in a different path. And people who I encountered along the way poured into me and encouraged me. And I had always enjoyed technology. And worked in retail in technology, and had a dad who would buy me PCs and equipment that I could hobby with. It just never occurred to me to choose technology as a career option. And I'm not entirely sure why, but I wandered around early in my career. I started in financial services and then took a job where I was tasked with installing a local area network. And I really didn't know anything about local area networks at the time. And the manufacturing company trained me, and I went ahead and installed the network and started doing database development. And really from that point on, I worked myself up through the ranks in IT. But there was never a point where I said, oh, I think I'm going to be a CIO one day.
Yeah, that's funny. Well, I do want to talk about your time at Covidien, when you were at Covidien, because you and I have a mutual dear friend that you and I have talked about a lot. And, you know, I mean, just like your parents, I mean, this person poured a lot into you and gave you a lot of opportunity. And just give a big shout out to Mark Tom. He is a dear friend of both of ours. And, you know, what you, I mean, because I remember you telling me early on, oh yeah, Mark was such an amazing mentor and he gave you all these opportunities. What do you think it was about him, Carissa, that made him such a good mentor? And I know mentoring has been something that you've continued to do, you know, with those underneath you, but what was it about Mark?
Yeah. So Mark is an amazing person. We're in Covidien, and I would say they had a way of approaching business that was sort of, I'll call it a my way or the highway approach. But it led to a degree of repeatable business. And Mark was the very human side of that. And I always respected when tough things and tough decisions had to be made, it's always great to have that human voice at the table when those decisions have to be made, right? Because it's that putting people first and encouraging people through difficult times to do difficult things in a very human way. And that's always what I found with Mark.
Yeah, that's a great way to describe him, I believe. Super brilliant. Super brilliant, but if you know him, incredibly humble too, you know, just a lot of humility, and he's a servant leader, you know. And I know for you, you know, Teresa, you've continued to do that. You continue to pull others along with you. What, you know, give me like, you know, what is some of the advice that you've given to some of your mentees? Just a couple of things.
Yeah, so nobody gets there alone. So that's the one thing I want to say is that, you know, everyone gets where they're going through the help of a lot of people. And I think it's important to recognize that. I think it's important to look for those things. And we spend so much time at work. It's important to surround ourselves with good leaders, with good teammates. And I have been so blessed over the years to have had just a ton of those people around me and pour into me. And so I really would encourage people to look for good places with good leaders and good teammates, because they will really help in your journey. And you just need that. If you're not finding it where you are, find it around in your community, right? I think it's also important. There's a value in owning your story and telling your story and not necessarily allowing that to be told for you. Because if you don't tell your own story, my general experience is that people will tell that story for you and it may not be the one that you want told.
Right.
So I think really advocating for yourself is pretty important along the way. Building a strong team. And I think if you see someone else's strength as a complement to your weakness and not a threat to your position and authority, I think you will do amazing things as a leader.
Yeah, that is so good. Well, I know that when you were at Covidien, you know, one of the things you got the opportunity to do, Teresa, and I remember early on you telling me about this too, the M&As that you were a part of. And I think, you know, executing M&As that were worth over $13 billion. Here's what I want to talk about. That is amazing to me. But here's what I want to talk about. Courage over comfort. There was a first time for you to be the person to handle those mergers and the integration of systems that had to happen. You know, how did you approach this monumental project? I'm going to say one other thing. This is just so interesting to me because Deb Blue, who is the CEO for Ancestry, was on the podcast. Deb was a former executive at Facebook, but she was a technology executive. And she said when she got approached to be that CEO, she goes, "Why me? I'm not a CEO. I'm a tech exec executive." But then she said, then she goes, "I was like, well, everybody has the first time to do something. So why shouldn't it be me?" So you had a first time to lead this monumental project. How did you approach it? How did you get the courage, Teresa, to do this?
Yeah. So there's a lot in that number, Lisa, right? So there's, probably about 20 deals that comprise all of that. And they kind of went both directions. So we bought a lot of things and we sold some things. And what that meant is there's the basic block and tackling of deciding when you buy a company or a group of assets, how those things get integrated. There's the ability to get the synergies and to get them quickly was an important piece of the overall financial justification for those deals. But there's also just the human aspect of those, which, you know, it's making those tough decisions and, really what the organization needs and who they need in order to carry them to that next level of growth. Those were probably the toughest because they have human impacts. And that's, the whether this system stays or that system stays is less impactful to the people mm-hmm. than whether one person stays versus another person stays. Mm-hmm. Ideally, we would love it if you could just find a way that everyone gets to stay, but that is unfortunately not necessarily the always the best for the total environment or really the individual. And the sooner we could sort those things out, Lisa, the better. And the sooner you can tell people what their destiny is, at least in their current environment, the better, because it allows people to start the process of adjusting mm-hmm. and changing if they need to. And I would say we did divest a number of businesses over the years. And many of those divestments actually created opportunities for leaders that they would not have had in our environment. So by us selling part of our business to private equity, it created leadership roles. And people left our company and became part of that divested entity and assumed the role of a head of applications or the head of infrastructure. And mm-hmm. that's not something that would have been available to them as a career path had they stayed with us. So in many ways, it often worked to the best of everybody's benefit. And some of our acquisitions, some of those people went on to amazing careers in other companies. So I think it's always making those decisions and trying to do that in the quickest and most human ways possible is the best I know.
Yeah, I love that. What's the human side of leadership? It's the human side of leadership. And, you know, I was going to ask you, because you went on to climb the ladder, Teresa, and like I said, pulling, just like what you just said, you pulled people along with you. You were the CIO. But let's talk a little bit. You became the CIO in 2012, and you stayed the CIO for about 10 years. But let's talk a little bit about leadership styles. I mean, what would you say? I know what I think myself, but, you know, what would you say is your leadership style? And did you see your leadership style evolve over the years? Did you see it change and grow?
I would say I tend to be a pretty quick decision maker, and that's Not always is it easy to explain to people how you made that decision, right? So I'm a quick decision maker, and usually my decisions bear out to have pretty good hit rate, pretty good quality, right? And so it's easy to move very fast. And sometimes I find that I have to slow down and bring people along. And learning to do that, probably in my leadership journey, and be patient and do that, was probably one of the biggest challenges I had as a leader, was just to bring people along in that transformation journey and the decisions in the and collaborate, right? Because we all have certain strengths, and recognizing where people are at and helping them get where they need to go is part of that leadership mandate, I think. And I didn't always appreciate that, Lisa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard that from so many different leaders, that, Teresa, you do have to learn that, because not everyone moves at the pace that you move at, you know. So learning to, you know, be empathic, you know, with those people, and to kind of lead them through changes, you know, not just managing the change, but lead them through changes. Well, you know what?
Yeah. You know this too, right? So as you move up, it becomes more about your relationships with other people. Mm. And less, you know, the table stakes are that you know how to do the job, right?
Yes.
But the piece that keeps you at the table, that might get you to the table, but the piece that keeps you at the table is the ability to collaborate and to work as a team unit and to be a business person in the total sense, right? You might be there because of your domain knowledge, but you stay there because of your ability to be a strong business leader and work well as a unit with the other executives.
Awesome words of wisdom there, Teresa. Well, you know what? I've got about 50 more pages of notes here, but we do need to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Teresa Sanzatera on the Something Extra podcast.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with my sweet friend and dear, dear sister, Teresa Sanzatera. So, Teresa, now you've done amazing things in your career. Now you are the VP of IT for Barry Waymiller. You know, if people are from St. Louis, they know what an amazing company this is, but we have people that listen from all over the globe. Can you just tell a little bit about Barry Waymiller and what makes this company so special?
Yeah, so Barry Waymiller is a global manufacturer, and we're about a little over $3 billion in revenue. We make machines that other manufacturers use to manufacture equipment, packaging, converting, and paper. And we have an engineering piece of our organization. So one of the special things about Barry Waymiller is our human-centered leadership. And really that came from our CEO, Bob Chapman. So, and the leadership team that was in place when Bob was putting the I'll call it methodology together. And now we've moved that into people in performance in harmony. So our CHRO, Rhonda Spencer, does a lot to lead the charge now for the company, where we're really balancing that people and performance in harmony message. And it really is about how we show up. And do we always get it perfect? Maybe we don't. But we know the charge. We know how we're supposed to show up. We know how we're supposed to care for each other. And it has just been an amazing experience for me, joining the company and being surrounded by all of these wonderful coworkers, leaders that genuinely care for each other and genuinely pour into each other so that we can all be successful.
Yeah, so good. Well, and for our listeners, if you want to know more, get Bob Chapman's book, Everybody Matters. And it's a fantastic book and you'll learn a lot more. But well, tell us about your role there. What are you responsible for, Teresa? You know, what are your big initiatives that you've got going on? What's coming around the corner?
Yeah, so I joined Barry Waymiller because it was going through a significant IT transformation. And as I considered what was next in my career, I had to think about, well, what do I really want to do? And where can I go that will really challenge me, tap into all of my experiences and learnings over the years, and where I can make the biggest difference? And a great story here, Lisa, is I was on one of our Inspire CIO meetings. It was a breakfast meeting, and I made the announcement of what I was looking for. And before I could even get all of the words out of my mouth, Frank Lanuto at Barry Waymiller was messaging me. And I hadn't really even contemplated Barry Waymiller. Having gone by the building probably my whole adult career and seeing what it was, I never stopped to think about, like, that might be my next stop. And Frank and I started a conversation in January. I joined in June, but there were several months where we just talked about what Barry Waymiller was about, what we built our relationship, which was really remarkable to me because it was more about building the relationship and feeling comfortable about becoming a part of the team. And we say, you know, welcome to the family. And I think there is a genuine sense of family at a very large company. And the recruiting process was sort of remarkable to me for that reason. Frank had a big charge in front of him, and it was really to transform an organization to fuel the next level of growth for the company. And that meant taking a company that had been largely decentralized and moving to corporate shared services and moving to an IT shared service model and really modernizing all of those disparate systems, consolidating, modernizing all of those disparate systems so that we could build a platform for the future growth. And I thought that is very interesting. So I came in the area of data and insights and quickly moved us to a modern technology platform for our data estate and have been working on really realizing the business enablement for the enterprise in terms of performance measurements. And really, there's a huge task in front of us to get data right so that we can fuel the future of AI, cognitive analytics, and all of those foundational things that need to happen in order for us to get where we hope to get in the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, let me ask you this, because you're talking about kind of getting set up and getting your infrastructure right for all those things. You know, what emerging technologies, Teresa, are you really excited about? And I'd love for you, you know, I just got back from the Boston National CIO Awards last week. And, you know, 265 CIOs there. What do you think was one of the top three things that they thought about? That they're thinking about that's top of mind.
ChatGPT has to be on the list.
Yes. Generative AI.
Generative AI.
That's number three. That was number three when you talk about top of mind. So what do you think about it? You know, and I know you're an advisor for an AI startup. So,
yes,
you know,
am.
How's it going to change the way we work? I mean, you know, is it, you know, and this is the age old question, right, Teresa? A lot of people are scared about this because they're thinking it's going to replace the human. Yeah,
right.
It's going to replace us. So tell me your thoughts about it.
Well, So, when you ask a technologist what they're excited about, and it tends to be those new technology things, my first thing is not to think about being protective, right? So having gone through the, the transition to PCs and the move from networked PCs to opening up the boundaries of the corporation and moving to the internet, right, which was a big technology transformation for us and opened up a world of possibilities and really created the ability for these big platforms, the move to cloud, right? If we were intimidated and scared by each of these technology moves, we would not be where we are today. And so I think the challenge ahead of us is, look, I think AI is there's policy that needs to be put in place. But, you know, we were talking about this with every single transformation in terms of technology in the last 20 years, right? It's just another step in that evolution. And I really don't worry too much about robots taking our jobs. I look at the strains and the stress of our society and just not having people to do the same amount of work. It still needs to happen, but it needs to happen in a very different way. And I think that frees humans up to do the things that humans do best, which are the creative side of things, the systematic types of things, right? So really thinking about things from an end-to-end process perspective and how technology and how AI and robotics can really supplement the human experience, not necessarily take over the human experience.
I love that. That's another great quote from you, Teresa. Supplement the human experience, not take it over. I mean, yeah, it's incredible. I mean, we see so many advances in the healthcare, for instance, healthcare. You know, there is an organization that we're a part of that we we're an evangelist for, and it's called Resilient Health. Well, Resilient Health is using robotic avatars to bring the best surgeons and doctors in the world to any neighborhood. You know,
see, there's so much power in that.
And there's so much power in that, right? I mean, there's so much power. The opportunity to improve lives of people is incredible, right? You know, with this kind of technology.
You know, I was reading an article this morning about tumor identification and how difficult that can be and how supplementing the human process with artificial intelligence is really moving us along in terms of the quality of care for those patients that find themselves in that situation. So, yeah, I think there's a world of possibilities for us.
Yeah, I do too. Well, Teresa, you know, I alluded to this in the beginning, but you've got lots of licenses and certifications from MIT that you just got in the last several years. You've got an applied business analytics certification, executive certificate in strategy innovation, executive certificate in artificial intelligence. You know, that is so inspiring to me, Teresa, because you and I are about the same age, know, and you could just be going, there's nothing new for me to learn under the sun, but you know, you're not content to stay where you are, and you want to keep evolving. You know, what other areas of interest do you have? How many more certificates are in the work right now? You're probably working on your PhD, and I just don't know it. But I love the growth mindset.
I haven't admitted to that yet, Lisa. But you're right. So I think there's a shift that happens, right? And it's really helping people understand the art of the possible. Right. And so when I ascended to the CIO role, I realized that part of my mandate was to bring the art of the possible to the table. And to do that, it was just one of those things I said to you earlier in our conversation, when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. I don't even know how I got connected with MIT, but at some point, it became the right thing for me. It exposed me to a world that was beyond just the walls of the company. And it caused me to think in a way that was bigger and differently than I had before. They have, their focus is really on the applying what you're learning. So it was just the right time and it was the right format of learning for me, where you're expected to learn, but you're expected to apply, right? And so doing that and thinking about how to take what I'm learning and put it in the real business context to move my business along was something that I found immensely gratifying. So I took my first class and I was hooked, right? And I just kept taking and taking and taking and taking. So it was just an amazing experience for me. I wish I had more time. I would be taking more. But just that community of thought leaders that they bring to the table, the participants that are just critical to your experience as a student in those classes, really second to none, Lisa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's just a lesson for all of us to, not stop growing, not stop, evolving as people, professionally, personally, all that. So, this is really cool. And then I want to talk about one other thing before we talk about something extra, but you'd share with me, and I personally have never seen it put quite like the way you did, Teresa, but you'd shared with me your growth journey matrix. And I love this. This was so cool. I just love it. It's really kind of a snapshot or a timeline, if you will, of your life in four major areas. And the four major areas cover four different decades of your life. So you say here was in my 20s, my 30s, my 40s, my 50s. We're not to the 60s yet. Neither one of us are, but we could be adding that. But your four major areas: professional, academic, personal, and leadership. And you have really worked on this. I mean, how has this helped you even kind of think about your life? And, it's a one page, which I also really love. It's not pages and pages. It's something you can keep in front of you. But how has it kind of helped you kind of think about your life?
Yeah. So I'll tell you how I got there. And, I occasionally get asked to speak to groups of female leaders or even aspiring leaders. I think that we're a holistic person, right? And probably that's true for both men and women. But, for women, we have to make that decision of having children, raising a family. And I think things are changing, Lisa, like there's more representation of men in that process. But there's growth that comes from becoming a mother. There's challenges that come from the prioritization that has to happen and the trade-offs that have to happen between your career and your family. There's a support structure around you that becomes important if you're going to ascend. And I really wanted to create a view, a snapshot to help people understand that, look, you're a whole person and you can do this. And at each point in my life, there were certain things that were happening. And not all of it in my snapshot is perfect, right? I've had challenges along the way, just like every other human, and some really disappointing and foundational things. I lost my dad, and that was a pivotal experience in my life, and it transformed me again, right? Because as I noted earlier in the conversation, he was such a towering influence in my life, and I'm actually married to the man I'm married today because of him, and to lose that was just such a tremendous loss for me. And so I think in telling that story, I'm saying, like, look, you're going to go through things, but that doesn't mean that you can't still figure it out, because there is a path. Every human has a journey. It's filled with happiness and it's filled with sadness and it's filled with challenge and it's filled with accomplishment. But you're going to navigate all of this stuff. And even in your 20s, if it feels like it's overwhelming and you can't, you're each period of your life, it's getting you ready for that next major experience of your life. And then you need to embrace those things, be happy about the challenges that come along, because they are forming you for that next thing that's going to come along.
Yeah, it sounds counterintuitive to say that, right, Teresa? Thankful for the challenges, thankful for the adversity. But, you know, again, I go back to what you said at the very beginning. You know, you often told your parents, you know, you would not change a thing about the experiences or the people, because all of those things are what makes you who you are today, right? So right. I love that. Okay, well, I want to talk about running real quick. And this is so funny to me, because you got twin girls, and one of them came to you and said, told you and Mark, I'm not a gymnast anymore. I'm a runner now. And she wanted you to, I think, sign up for a 5K or a half marathon. And she goes, Mom, you can do this. And your response was, but I'm not sure I want to. But I want you to talk about running. Now you have ran, you're an ultra marathon runner. You have ran 50 mile plus runs. Because we could probably do a whole podcast just on this, Teresa, but I really want you to talk about, have you thought about running kind of as a metaphor for life, for, you know, your career? I mean, how have you thought about running? Because it's kind of like what I talk about gardening.
Yeah. So I think I mentioned to you before, I had a great boss who encouraged me to consider the CIO role. Right. And so I have to tell the story in the context of, and this individual I wasn't quite sure I was ready. Every time he would say like, oh, I think, you know, you should really consider this, I would go, but I don't have this. And he was like, yeah, but how hard could that be? You've done all this other stuff. And we had this debate going back and forth many, many years. And every time there was a really big challenge, he would throw it my way. So I did commit, and you're right, it was one of the twins who said, hey, I want to be a runner. And my husband, while we were athletes, we didn't run. And so I had no idea what a 5K was. I mean, I know the distance, right? But I really couldn't conceptualize what running that meant, right? Because I just had no framework for it. And so we signed her up for that, and she was probably 8 years old, right? And at the last minute, she was like, oh, I don't think I can do this by myself. Can somebody run? And I was like, so I drew this short straw, and I ended up being the one to run with she and our twin. I didn't just sign us up for any race. I signed us up for a cross-country trail 5K. And she took off like a bullet out of a gun. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to die if I try to keep up with her. Needless to say, her twin and I survived it, but she finished overall female champion. And I was like, well, I'll be doggone, you really are a runner. And so that kind of started us all on that journey. And my oldest was the one that ran the half marathon. And she and I had done a lot of sports together. And this was just another chapter in our overall sports book. And I was not sure I wanted to do it. So I thought, this is growing on me. Maybe I should sign up for this half marathon thing. I called some friends, got a lot of advice. The running community is an exceptional community. And they just kind of surround you when you want to do something like this. And I signed up for training. I signed up for my goal race. And lo and behold, my boss comes to me with this major project. I'm thinking I have time to do this. He's thinking, not at all. You got to deploy global payroll to 64 countries in 6 months, right? And my vendor was saying, it's never been done before. And I'm like, well, we're going to do it. And oh, by the way, alongside all of these 18-hour days, I'm going to train for a half marathon too. So I would work sometimes until 6-7 o'clock at night. I would put on my gear, go out and run, come back, work from 8 to midnight. It was a grueling experience, but I thought, you know what? I committed to it. So let's just go ahead and see it through. I did complete the half marathon in April, and then we did finish all of the payroll go lives by June. And I thought, wow, you know, this is pretty good, because as you are expanding your contributions, a different kind of stress comes from that. And running became kind of an outlet for me. It also became a good space for me to take time to think. And my calendar was really packed with a lot of things, and I didn't have that space to just really think. Mm-hmm. And so those long runs, sometimes with a group and sometimes alone, were my time to do that. So one of the people at the company asked me, well, what are your goals? And I knew that they were talking about career goals, but I said, well, I'm going to run a 50 miler. And I went on and I did exactly that. And what I found, just like I find in work and becoming a leader, right, is that when you're ready, the resources do show up for you. And you don't get there by yourself. I know lots of people who've run way more than 50 miles at this point, because I have a whole community of folks that I found in my journey that poured into me and really gave me the advice I needed to figure it out, the encouragement I needed to stick with it, and the support. Because when you're running 50 miles, you don't always do it alone. There's usually people who are crewing for you, volunteers who stay at aid stations all day, hours of the day and night, your family who makes sacrifices for you to be able to do those things. And really, sometimes standing between you and just not finishing a race is that one human who steps into your challenges and says, here, sit down. Let me bandage your wounds. Let me put a clean pair of socks on your feet. Let me give you something to eat and to drink, and then get you up out of the chair, pat you on the back, and tells you, you got it. And you just get sent back out on the trail to finish. And that's true for life, right? Sometimes in our mm-hmm. challenge, it's those people who take a moment, help us with our challenges, and then encourage us to get back into the game. And I just found a lot of good stuff that was, they fed one another, if you will, Lisa.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm going to keep encouraging you, Teresa. I told you, you need to write your book, you know, I'm going to keep bugging you about it. So anyway, I'm putting it out there in the universe right now. But Teresa, you know, this is something extra. So what do you believe is the something extra every leader needs?
I think it's humility and gratitude. Nobody gets there alone. I know that's the one thing, but I'm going to tell you it's two. No one gets there alone. I'm where I am because a ton of people, my parents, my grandparents, you, Sri, Bill Wickenhauser, Marge Smith, and the list goes on. My siblings, my husband, my coworkers, the people who've reported to me over the years, the people I've mentored, they've given so much to me on my journey. I can't ever pay them back, right? But I know I have to pay it forward, and that's always what I'm committed to do. But recognizing the contributions that other people have made.
That's beautiful.
And before we wrap up, I want to make sure I make a plug for the HMZ Summit that's coming up in the fall. If we have time, I want to make sure that this is always, no matter how busy my schedule gets, I always make time to attend the HMG CIO Summit, which this year in St. Louis is October 5th at the Chase Park Plaza. And I encourage anyone who's out there in the CIO community or a senior leader in an IT organization, if you want to come, we'll go ahead and include the link in the podcast notes so that you can click on that and get yourself registered. This year is going to be exciting. I'm co-hosting with Gary Vondahar from MasterCard. It's going to be a great time. We'll have Mark Miller, the former VP of High Performance at Chick-fil-A, who will come and talk to us. It really is a top-rate conference. And again, I encourage the listeners to go ahead and register and come.
Well, Teresa, I just appreciate you so much. And I'm just going to put it out there, you know, because I just appreciate you so much. And, you know, I'm just going to go as far just to say, I love you. I love you. You're my sister. And I'm so proud of you. And I just appreciate you making the time today to be on the show.
Absolutely, Lisa.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.